Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. The Freeman Report and James Freeman on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. My name is James Freeman and it is Tuesday, the 19th of March, 2024. And if you just join me, I've just been talking about online censorship by big tech and our governments with Jamie McIntyre. And we've also been talking about the First Minister for Wales, Vaughan Gething, the new First Minister for Wales, those 20 mile an hour speed limits and some of the challenges going on. We've also talked about there's a lot of settlements being built in Grangetown in Wales, which the government in Wales is not saying what they're being used for. They're indicating that they're being built to house the homeless when actually it's being used for illegal aliens. If you're interested in listening back to the show, it'll be uploaded in the next few hours. Just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes tab. And there you'll be able to watch all of my previous shows and you'll be able to listen back as well if you were in the car or doing something like the gardening. Right, now, I spoke at length about the situation in Gaza in my introduction in the first hour of the show. I said that over a million people are now facing catastrophic hunger and starvation, according to a new IPC report. The Secretary of State for Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Affairs, Lord Cameron of Chipping Norton, a.k.a. Dave Cameron, he says the report's findings are of grave concern. My question to the unelected Foreign Secretary is, why has the UK government, along with the US, supported Israel in leading us to where we are now? Because the situation hasn't happened overnight. It has taken months to get us to this point. Months of bombing civilians, of displacing more than a million people who are trying to flee the bombs, and months of Israel refusing to let aid into the territory. It should be clear to anybody by now that what this amounts to is the collective punishment of a whole population. International law is clear on this. It is a war crime to intentionally starve a population as part of warfare, which is exactly what Israel is doing. All of this on top of bombing tens of thousands of civilians. Now, it seems that the winner of the prize for best international feature at the Oscars, British Jew Jonathan Glazer, agrees with this statement about the Israeli government. Because as part of his acceptance speech at the Oscars, Glazer said, "We stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people." Now, it seems that there's a lot of people in Hollywood who don't agree with this stance, as more than 450 Jewish figures in Hollywood have signed an open letter condemning the acceptance speech by Glazer. In an open letter addressing the speech, they say that we refute our Jewishness being hijacked for the purpose of drawing a moral equivalence between a Nazi regime that sought to exterminate a race of people and an Israeli nation that seeks to avert its own extermination. The letter goes on to say every civilian death in Gaza is tragic, but they defend the conduct of Israel, saying that it is targeting Hamas and not civilians. The letter goes on to say that anti-Jewish hatred is growing around the world. Quite telling that, because if anti-Jewish hatred is indeed growing around the world, are they not asking why that is? Do they think that people around the world support Hamas? Do they think that people don't understand the situation? Do they think Israel doesn't have the right to defend itself? Because bombing and starving a whole population cannot be justified. It cannot be explained as Israel protecting itself. If anti-Jewish hatred is indeed growing around the world, it is because of the actions of the Israeli government. Just as the International Court of Justice has said, Israel cannot use the October attacks, as awful as they were. It cannot use them as justification for its own actions against civilian populations since those attacks took place. And as I said in the first hour, Jews around the world need to speak out because Israel is heading for pariah status in the eyes of many people around the world. Right, I'm going to move on now from that topic as I will be talking about that with Basil Valentine in a moment. But I want to move on because if you're not doing anything on the 3rd, 4th and 5th of May, then listen up because I've got two tickets to give away for the Weekend Truth Festival in Workington, Cumbria, just on the edge of the Lake District. Kate Shemarani, Katie Hopkins, Matt Letizier and a whole host of other great speakers will be performing at the festival, which is being organised by the Buxton Freedom Hub. And all you need to do to win this free pair of tickets for the whole weekend is the following three simple tasks. Just head over to the X platform and follow this account at W Truth Festival. Follow that account at W Truth Festival. Share the post pinned at the top of the account, which contains the festival flyer. Share that with your followers and leave a comment underneath saying, I want some tickets or something similar. Do those three simple tasks. And we're going to pick the winner tomorrow, at the end of tomorrow, at random. I think there's only a handful of people that have entered so far. So if you get over there, you've got a very, very good chance of winning. If you want to get in touch about anything to do with the show, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And as always, I encourage you to join in the conversation. We've got over 100 people in the chat room at the moment. Just head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hiya, Gemma. Are you going to enter the competition?
No, I feel a bit conflicted if I do that. I work for TNT, so I'll let you're listening or watching, if you're listening or watching, then you deserve to enter. I'll stay out. I'll stay out of that one.
Yeah, people need to go though. I think I counted this morning. There's only a handful of people that have entered so far. I don't know how much the tickets cost. You know, but they're not going to be cheap for a whole weekend. So it's two free tickets. So if you're watching this, get yourself over to X now. If you live in the area, or maybe, you know, you can travel. It's not that far from many parts of the UK. Get yourself over and have a go. And you may end up with some tickets tomorrow. Right, Gemma, what stories have you got for us?
Well, I'm loath to continue Kate Gate, but, you know, it's one of those stories that just keeps on giving. And today, in the last few hours, Prince William has actually been photographed at an official event, laughing and joking around and obviously trying to deflect attention away from the grainy video of him and allegedly Kate at the farm shop in Windsor. He's in a homeless charity in Sheffield, a homelessness project, which he's got links with, and he is... you know, very casual, waving at the crowd like nothing has happened, nothing to see. And King Charles in the last few hours has also hosted an event at Buckingham Palace for veterans of the Korean War. So for the royals, it seems it's business as normal, despite the wildly circulating rumours and speculation and endless chatter on social media, on X, on Twitter, it's saying this picture, this video will silence the conspiracy theorists. And most people on there are saying, are you silenced yet? I'm not. So it's done nothing more than add fuel to a considerable fire. And I know we did talk about that at the top of the last hour. I've been talking about it all day here on TNT. I kind of wish I wasn't, really, but there you go. Also today, on a more serious note, is outrage has been sparked by some messaging boards at King's Cross Station in London, one of the busiest stations in London, serving mostly the north of England. Some display boards have featured some Islamic teachings as part of Ramadan. It's day 9 of Ramadan. And the Hadith teaching, which is allegedly a teaching from Prophet Muhammad, says, all sons of Adam are sinners, but sinners, the best sinners are those that repent. Often it's caused quite a stir. It's caused quite controversy. People saying that those kind of things, religion has no place really in a public setting like that. They should be kept for mosques and churches where people can go and celebrate their faith privately. And it shouldn't be necessarily put in the public domain or paid for by taxpayers or train passengers. So that's also another story that's broken in the last few hours. And also just interesting, we're nearly at the fourth anniversary of lockdown. And two schools in the UK have gone into lockdown in the last 24 hours. One is in the northeast of England in Hartlepool, and the other one is in Wales. Now, both of those lockdowns were in response to threats. One was made by a former student of a school in Hartlepool, and the other one was to do with malicious communication to a school in Wales. But I just think it's interesting how lockdown and the actual policy of lockdown have entered both our language and our behaviour here in the UK. It seems it's really become embedded into our culture over the last 4 years, and it's a word we never heard or acted upon before 2020. And now at the slightest drop of a hat, two schools in lockdown, you know, sets of pupils in lockdown. It's definitely part of the lexicon of our culture as we're heading to the fourth anniversary of when the world went mad.
Yeah, it did go mad as well, didn't it, Gemma? Explain what's happened with these schools then. So they've obviously gone into lockdown. How long has that lockdown been for? You'd presume that the police show up and then kids can just go home. How long has this gone on for?
Yeah, they went on for a few hours, both lockdowns. One to do with malicious communication. That was the school in Wales, and the school in Hartlepool in the northeast of England. It was a former student that was making threats to the school. Now, I don't think necessarily those things would be new. I don't think that is, you know, you remember when bomb threats were a thing. I don't know if you remember the 80s and the 90s, early 90s, but, you know, people were phoning up and saying, well, there's been a bomb planted. And it wasn't. It was just a bomb scare and places would be evacuated. Now it's an opposite. You'd be on lockdown until things are sorted out. And I think this is an indication of where we've shifted as a result of 2020 onwards. Lockdown is a global, well-known, well-used term with a definite effect. And it's normalized. Been normalized very, very quickly. Both of the schools let the kids go. You know, they're not still on lockdown now, nothing like that. Parents said they were concerned, but both incidents were resolved. It's not the incidents themselves that are the concerning thing necessarily, or the interesting thing about this story, these stories. They're separate stories, but they've happened within 24 hours of each other in very different parts of the UK. It's the word, both of them, lockdown, both of them, you know, the parents weren't complaining that their parents weren't complaining that their kids were shut in school. They were like, no, that's fine. It's what we expect now. It's become very embedded in our collective consciousness, which means, could it come back on a global scale?
Yeah, I have got some other things I'd like to say on that, but maybe we'll do that another time, because I do want to talk on Kate Gate as much as I normally don't talk about the royals. But on a slight tangent to that, do we know yet what is up with the king? Obviously, we know that he's got cancer. I don't believe, or I haven't read anywhere, what type of cancer that is, what the prognosis is yet. And part of me does feel maybe this whole Kate Gate thing is actually a distraction from that. What do we know about the king, Gemma?
You're absolutely right. Very little. Very little indeed. While the Kate circus continues to roll around globally, King Charles is getting along quietly with his life, very quietly indeed, actually. There is no prognosis and there is no official definition of the cancer he has. He went in for prostate, didn't he? Allegedly. That's the line that was fed to the mainstream media, which is being parroted out. And we can only glean what we know from that. A quiet engagement today for veterans of the Korean War. They'll be hosted a dinner tonight by the Princess Royal and the Duchess of Edinburgh, not the King himself, which leads you to believe he's not well enough to attend evening functions. Who knows? Who knows with the royals? There seems to be a lot of gaslighting going on and a lot of mixed messages coming out of both Kensington Palace and Buckingham Palace.
And is there any indication when they think that the King will be back to duty? Is there any indication at all, or is that just not mentioned?
Well, today it was an official royal engagement, not full duties, obviously, otherwise he would be at the dinner this evening. No, at the moment, it's just he's been spotted, though, out and about. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation about the king, that the king is dead. I think maybe this appearance was to allay those fears, maybe similar with Kate Middleton's very strange video, if indeed it is her. I think a lot of people have got their doubts, myself included, and I would never normally go near royal family, never would go near royal family stories like this, because they're just a massive pantomime and distraction, which we pay for. But there is something afoot in the House of Windsor at the moment, and this story isn't going to go away, I'm sure about that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely not. And of course, a lot of people are suspicious that actually that, you know, this is all about the king. Some of the stories I've heard so many, by the way, you know, all sorts, some absolutely outlandish, others not so much. But, you know, one of them is the fact that Kate has had a breakdown because she's found out she's going to be queen sooner than what she'd expected. And I think maybe that there are legs on that story, because we haven't been told anything from about the king's prognosis. Presumably, if it was minor and he was going to be okay, we would have been told. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't have been told. So maybe that's what all of this is about. Who knows? I'm sure we're going to find out in the coming weeks, though. Right, Gemma, thank you so much for those stories. Speak to you again tomorrow. We're going to take a quick short break now. And when we come back, I'm going to be joined by TNT's very own political editor, Basil Valentine. I'm sure that we'll be talking about Israel and Palestine. I've got an awful lot to say about that, as you've seen in my introduction. So anyway, stick with us here. We're going to have a great conversation after this short break on TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything, or how much it needs to spend, is £1.2 trillion, or 1.2 million million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Caution. You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
TNT Radio.
Right, Basil, I spoke at length in my introduction there about this situation that we're seeing now. Obviously, this hasn't happened overnight. This has been building up for a long time. But we've now got over 1 million people that are basically out of food. And the situation is catastrophic. Basil, what are your thoughts on this whole debacle?
I think it's... good to be with you, by the way, James, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. I think it's the most awful situation of my lifetime by a long way. We've run out of words, really. Abysmal, obscene, repulsive, call it what you like. The United Nations Human Rights Office has said just today that Israel's continued restrictions on Gaza may amount to use of starvation as a method of war. This was confirmed even by Josep Borrell, the European Union foreign minister, and by aid agencies like Oxfam, who've said that in the first instance, Israel restricts their trucks from entering Gaza. When they do allow them to enter, they attack the trucks. And then if the trucks manage to make it to the place of distribution, they start shooting at the people going to collect the aid. They called it a perfect storm of the denial of humanitarian assistance. And yet, people like Ilon Libby continue to insist that there is no limit to the amount of aid that can enter Gaza. If that's the case, why are the Americans so theatrically building this pontoon harbour if all this aid can enter? I mean, this is really the most bizarre situation of all time, with Israel supplying, the United States supplying Israel with the bombs and bullets to murder everyone, and then trying to just sort of feed the starving while they wait to be shot and blown to pieces. The atrocities continue on a daily basis in terms of murders, just random murders, random demolitions. Israel is acting like an out-of-control homicidal maniac. It's as simple as that, James.
Yeah, and David Cameron, our unelected foreign secretary, says that it's concerning, this IPC report that came out yesterday. What do you make of those comments, given that, like I said, you know, you don't get to a point where people are in famine. We're right on the edge of that. I mean, essentially, people have run out of food now. The situation is catastrophic. You don't get to that position overnight, do you? So what do you make of his comments saying that it's concerning, this new report?
Pathetic, totally inadequate language, concerning. You know, I might be concerned about buttons falling off a shirt or something. You know, I might be concerned about getting a parking ticket. We're talking about the deliberate and systematic starvation of hundreds of thousands of people. We know that dozens have already died of starvation. It is the severest acceleration in nutritional depletion that the authorities have ever witnessed. You know, this report yesterday that came out from the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, a UN-backed group, said that 1.1 million people are facing famine and suffering catastrophic levels of hunger. That demands stronger words and, more importantly, action, than simply saying it's concerning, James.
And are you getting any indications at all, Basil, that you know, the number of Jewish people calling for a ceasefire around the world is increasing? Because, of course, you know, from day one after the attacks, it's always the line for a lot of Jewish people has been Israel has the right to defend itself. But I struggle with that a few weeks later after that. Never mind now that we've seen more than 30,000 civilians bombed to death and over a million people now right on the edge of starvation. Are you seeing any signs at all that that mood among the Jewish community globally is changing?
Yes, I am. And I want to draw a sharp distinction between the Jewish community as a whole, particularly in diaspora outside Israel, and Zionism. Now, Zionism is supported by the Conservative Party, the Labour Party. It is the political ideology of support for Israel. And you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. Joe Biden is one of the most ardent Zionists there is. All these congressional politicians and members of parliament, a lot of them the beneficiaries of generous campaign contributions from Zionist organizations, most of them are not Jewish. Simple as that. On the other hand, at the ceasefire demonstrations in London and all sorts of initiatives across the United States, you see lots of Jewish people opposing the genocide. It's as simple as that. So Zionism is a cult. It's a faction, an extremely powerful one with tentacles globally, that has effectively hijacked the name of Jewishness for its own ends, with disastrous consequences as well, I might add. On all this stuff about Jews feeling unsafe and it's, you know, complete nonsense. I've seen lots of posts on social media from anti-Zionist Jewish people, many of whom we platformed here on TNT, who obviously do not feel in the least bit threatened by people calling for a ceasefire. It's complete nonsense to say people who want peace are somehow dangerous to any minority group. So, yeah, things are changing. We've seen bizarre outbursts in the last few hours from Donald Trump, who's been alleging that Jews who vote for Democrats hate their religion and Israel. I mean, that's one of his most bizarre comments. But more relevant, really, even the man known as the Senator for Tel Aviv, Chuck Schumer, the House Majority Leader who represents New York, he said that Israel cannot survive as a pariah and has called for fresh elections. Now, you don't get more ardently Zionist than Chuck Schumer, I can promise you. But he recognizes that Israel is now in a position of global opprobrium. It's as simple as that. All over the world, people have had enough. They've seen enough children with their legs blown off and faces burnt off, and now thousands, hundreds of thousands being literally starved to death. I mean, all the international agencies are saying this is a totally unprecedented situation. But I'm ashamed to say the official position of the British government is that it is allowed to continue. Only when we see things like the Israeli ambassador, Tzipi Hotoveli, being sent home will we start to take David Cameron's milquetoast comments a little bit more seriously.
Yeah, it's very, very curious. You can see, I can understand the initial sort of reaction to the attacks from a lot of Israelis and Jewish people around the world. They were pretty awful attacks. For a lot of people, it came as a big surprise, although the Israeli government itself was warned that the attacks were coming. And of course, you know, it let them happen as well. But putting all of that aside, it's a real odd one that people around the world think that continuing to say that Israel is allowed to defend itself is doing Israel any favours. It really isn't. I think the sooner they get rid of Netanyahu and his administration, the better, because this is, I think, long term. I think we're already at the stage now, Bas, and I think you'd agree that this is doing real damage to Israel. And if anything is going to question whether Israel should exist, it is this. It is not the Palestinians. It is not Hamas with their, defunct fighters around squirreling around tunnels. It is not that is going to challenge the existence of Israel. It is what they are doing now. Right, Basil, we're going to take a quick break for the news headlines, but don't go anywhere. We've got more to chat about straight after this short break on TNT.
This news just in. TNT Radio News.
Ready? Go.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin has scorned Washington for weaponizing its Justice Department against its presidential candidates. The US now says it wants to hold urgent talks with Russia and China on a new nuclear arms control agreement. And the UN is warning of imminent famine in Gaza, where it says more than 1 million people have completely exhausted their food supplies and are now suffering from catastrophic levels of hunger.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Right, now, Basil, I hear that Rachel Reeves, the shadow finance minister in the UK, she's getting herself in a bit of trouble. What's she been saying?
Well, it's what she's due to say tonight. She's due to deliver an important lecture in which she will say that Labour wants an inclusive version of the decade of renewal that followed Margaret Thatcher's election in 1979. Margaret Thatcher succeeded in destroying large sections of British industry, of course, had that famous fight with the miners, as well as a fight with the Falklands, but, you know, was vehemently opposed by the Labour Party of the time at every term. And of course, brought in the disastrous privatisation that has seen bills soar, water companies sold off, countless billions exported to shareholders, while our rivers and coasts are filled with pollution. Hardly a renewal, but Labour has moved so far to the right under the leadership of Keir Starmer that now they want to start praising Thatcher openly, which leads to the question that what on earth is the point of an opposition? Well, there's been some pushback against this. Richard Leonard, the former Scottish Labour Party leader, tweeted out, in the 1980s, manufacturing was butchered, factory after factory closed, privatisation was let rip, unemployment rocketed, which it did, it went to over 3 million, profits boomed, wages fell, the rich got richer and inequality soared. No rewriting of history. Thatcher didn't renew the economy, she broke it. And I can only echo those sentiments. Reeves, by the way, I think is absolutely appalling.
Yeah. I'd agree with all of that. I think, you know, Thatcher did oversee a bit of a boom, didn't she, in the 80s? But you have to question now what that boom was based upon. I think it was all to do with coming off the gold standard still. They obviously, her and Reagan loosened a lot of the regulations in the City of London, the same in America. I think the boom was based upon that because a lot of the changes that she made to British society, as we're learning now, I mean, you know, the privatisation of all of these public services essentially has just ended in disaster, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there was a more coherent social contract, as it's called, in the 1970s, where people felt that, you know, they could organise and petition employers for higher wages. Thatcher finally sort of called there being no such thing as society, just individuals, you know, and the sort of whole greed is good culture came about under her watch. Yes, there was a boom in the late 80s. We had the so-called Big Bang, massive deregulation of the city, and yes, expanded financial services sectors and things like that. But remember, that particular government saw the riches of North Sea oil flowing into government coffers and completely squandered it. We don't really have anything to show for the North Sea oil boom, which is now largely over. So, you know, all in all, as far as I'm concerned, Thatcher was not only an abysmal politician, but a disaster for the country, and is indeed being depicted by the Victoria and Albert Museum as a villain. This is a really hilarious take. It's a comedy exhibition which features Punch and Judy and talks about how the villain in the Punch and Judy show has evolved over the years. And rather than being always a crocodile or other historic figures, sometimes now in Punch and Judy shows, the villain is Adolf Hitler, Osama bin Laden, or indeed Margaret Thatcher. portrayed as the buddy. Now, this has been attacked by Culture Secretary Lucy Fraser, who told LBC this morning, "I saw that and I didn't think it was appropriate." That awful word again, James, appropriate, inappropriate, you know. Well, I think in describing objects in museums and galleries, I think the creator has an important role to look at the history to make sure that their objects are understood. But these are matters for individual institutions. And the V&A have replied by saying, "Punch and Judy is seen as a traditionally British, but it actually evolved from 16th century Italian street performance, commedia dell'arte. Who knew? Over the years, the evil character in the seaside puppet show has shifted from the devil to unpopular figures, including Adolf Hitler, Margaret Thatcher, and Osama bin Laden." So she's sandwiched between the two to offer contemporary villains.
I don't know about you, Basil, but I used to enjoy a bit of Punch and Judy when I was a kid. It was always brought out at all the fairs and everything. Not so much these days, I think. It is a crime, isn't it, what happened with North Sea oil? If you look to smaller countries such as Norway that have set up a sovereign wealth fund, they've got one of the biggest sovereign wealth funds in the world, haven't they? I mean, their population really do benefit from that, whereas the UK has just squandered that money.
Well, that's right. It went in tax cuts for the rich, I'm afraid, basically, James. Yeah. That was the Thatcher mantra. We should have used it to build infrastructure, to build railways, hospitals, schools, you know, things for the common good. But unfortunately, that wasn't the Thatcher way. Worth remembering as well that if Jim Callaghan had gone to the country in the autumn of 1978, when Labour had got inflation down and things were looking a lot better, then we wouldn't have had any Thatcher. But he hung on for one more winter, which became known as the Winter of Discontent. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Final question for you, Basil. Do you think that, I mean, obviously the country's in a bit of a mess at the moment on many fronts. The economy's not that great. We've got highest taxes ever on record. We've got failing public services. Do you think it's going to get worse under Labour, or do you think they can't do any worse?
I don't think we'll see much change, to be honest. The Labour Party are talking about, you know, the credit card is maxed out and we're going to have to suffer more austerity. What these people don't understand with economics is that it's not the same as your own personal finances. Governments can borrow money to stimulate the economy. That dreadful Reeves woman was talking about how her mother showed her how to balance the books on the kitchen table. I mean, this is absolutely absurd that we've got an ignoramus like this who wants to come in and be Chancellor of the Exchequer. No, nothing's going to change, unfortunately, under Labour. They've said nothing will change. I think, if anything, they may be even more authoritarian than the current Conservative government, which does at least have a few libertarian-minded MPs amongst it. Labour under Starmer is the most abysmal, sort of technocratic, colourless, self-serving, self-aggrandising bunch of nobodies that I've ever seen assembled in Parliament before.
What a fantastic description there from our political editor, Basil Valentine. Thank you very much, Basil, for joining me. Look forward to our next discussion, whatever that is. Right, thank OK, you, we're going to take a quick break now for some more headlines. When we come back, I'll be speaking with Steve Milloy. He's a self-declared climate science contrarian. So I wonder what we'll be talking about right after this short break here on TNT.
My name's Stacey. I'm 57, and I was adopted in 2020.
We were adopted in 2019.
And we were adopted in 2021.
We had a house, and it sounds crazy, but it wasn't a home. The one thing that Jake and Emma brought is it became a home.
When I met Dakota, he had just turned 14.
You weren't there for the first this and the first that. I missed the first words, but we got a lot of other firsts.
Watching her say, oh my God, I cannot believe I got my license. And she's like, I passed. And I'm like, girl.
See them grow. It is.
They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
You and you.
Kids in the middle.
What I thought was a complete life was nowhere near complete. But it is now.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
You ever heard of a polyp? Sounds like a rare species of toad. Actually, it's a lump that grows inside me, your bowel. Look, I'm pretty sure if you had a strange lump growing on your forehead, you might get it looked at, right? But when they're growing inside me, nothing, nada. And the polyps I get can lead to Australia's second deadliest cancer. So, until there's a way to make them grow on your face, it's up to you to get me looked at. Got it?
This is the Freeman Report with your host, James Freeman, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right. Well, my next guest, Steve Milloy, is a self-declared climate contrarian. Thank you for joining me on the show, Steve. Listen, at a time when public services are really, you know, stretched for money, there's a lot of failure in the system. Is it right that hospitals are delivering net zero policies?
Well, James, thanks for having me. Yeah, so last night I learned that there's a hospital in UK, I guess, that is implementing net zero policies. Meanwhile, its ceilings are crashing in and hurting patients. And, you know, even if you believe in the climate hoax, even if you believe it, you know, the entire UK could fall off the globe, go dark, never emit again. It would not make any difference to atmospheric carbon dioxide levels. So why is a hospital focusing on climate when it really should be focusing on its own building? Yeah. And this is sort of symbolic of what climate is. I mean, you know, the world is falling apart around us. And the most important issue for at least the American government, for example, and the UN is climate change, which no one can really do anything about.
Now, I'm sure being a climate contrarian, like here on TNT, we talk about all the time, you know, our officials will talk about it's a settled science. Now, it's settled science. The globe is warming. It's all to do with the climate changing, which is a result of man-made factors. Are you seeing any kind of challenge to that? Because there are scientists that are pushing back, serious scientists. But are you seeing any kind of acceptance that maybe things are not quite how they're saying? It's not settled science?
Well, it's not settled science in the United States at all. I mean, we push back all the time. Most people don't prioritize climate. You know, people that have open minds on the subject don't believe in the climate hoax. It's sad to see that, you know, around the world, in the UK, even conservatives in the UK don't seem to be allowed to talk about the science. So if you can't talk about the science, then you really can't talk about the issue and you just have to accept whatever government says. Well, you know, we're not going to do that over here.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, the government brought forward the Climate Act. I forget which year it was, but essentially it is actually law in the UK that the government acts and works towards reducing carbon emissions. So that's actually law in the UK. Yeah. What's the situation in the US then? Because obviously the Biden administration is trying to push, you know, these net zero policies. But do you have the same sort of legal restrictions in the US that guide the administration there?
No, we really don't. It's really all Joe Biden's policy. If we have another Trump administration, for example, Donald Trump will be able to pull us out of the Paris Climate Accords. We don't really have any mandatory emissions cuts. They're really just sort of executive policy. And executive policy formulated by a man who has publicly stated that he believes global warming is worse than nuclear war. So just leave that to the listeners to ponder.
Yeah. And what do you think public opinion is in the States? Do you think that it's as clear cut as Democrats, Democrat supporters generally believe in climate change and Republicans don't? Or do you think it's more nuanced than that?
Well, you know, I'd like to point to a New York Times poll of likely voters ahead of the 2022 election, which reported that only 1% of voters prioritize climate. So people don't generally think about it. No one votes in the United States on climate. It's just not that important. It is kind of a tribal issue. If you are a Democrat, you tend to believe climate hysteria. If you are not a Democrat, then you're a lot more open-minded and sort of have dialed into reality and understand that you're not being told the truth.
Yeah, and of course, the other big thing that we're seeing globally is the farmers pushing back against a lot of these policies. We've seen it in Europe, big protests here outside the European Parliament. We've even had our own protests in Wales, in the UK here. What's going on in the US? Are you seeing the same sorts of policies being pushed on farmers there?
Well, we do. So the attack on farmers is an attack on food production. And so those are the twin goals of climate are to reduce energy production and reduce food production with the hope of reducing people, because when you take away their food and energy, you know. So in the United States, farmers are really just kind of waking up to it because, you know, these policies of like reduced fertilizer use, which I know that the EU is really pressing. That hasn't really come home to roost, but we have this phenomenon in the United States, ESG investing, environmental social governance, And so the all the big banks, BlackRock, Bank of America, they are just in the early phases of pressing farmers on financing and pushing them about their greenhouse gas emissions as well as fertilizer use. You know, there is no substitute for fertilizer. If we don't use fertilizer, we won't be able to produce the food that we need to feed people. And so, it's very important that people dial into these issues. Farmers, they imagine they'll just be able to pass the costs along to consumers. That's not going to be the case because there won't be the food.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know whether you follow what's going on in the UK here, but in Wales, the Welsh government here has got something called its sustainable farming scheme. And basically it wants to force farmers to turn over 20% of their land to planting trees and supporting wildlife. We've also just heard in the last couple of days as well about the English government, the UK government, what they want to do in England, which is giving tax breaks if farmers do a very similar thing to what they're doing in Wales. I mean, what do you make of this? Because, you know, the prices of food is already too high for a lot of people. In the UK, we're not self-sufficient food-wise. I mean, what's the answer to this? What are we going to feed people if they're successful in reducing the amount of food production?
Well, you know, I know that people find this hard to believe, but the Greens really do want to produce less food because they want fewer people. And so it's very difficult to believe, but they are forcing land out of production. Right now, they're trying to seduce land out of production. This is happening in the United States as well. The government is trying to pay farmers to leave land fallow. You have billionaires like Bill Gates buying up farmland and just leaving it alone. We have Chinese buying farmland for God knows what reason. But so there are all these different schemes to encourage farmers not to grow food. And I'm sorry, but you know, the fact that we can produce an incredible amount of food is what has prevented the 18th century predictions of Thomas Malthus and more recently, you know, Paul Ehrlich, from not coming true. We have technology, we can produce food, we have a growing global population, we need the food, but of course Greens are against that.
And what do American consumers make of these new products that are coming on the market? Of course, we've all heard about fake meat, which has been banned by the Italian government now. But, you know, we're also hearing, you know, you will eat the bugs, which is a common line coming out of the WEF. Are American consumers seeing these products on the shelves yet?
Well, we have mostly seen fake meat. This sort of laboratory concoction that they call meat substitute. It's not doing well in the United States. These businesses are failing. You know, they had very high stock market valuations several years ago, but now they're basically all in the toilet because nobody wants this stuff. And it's going to be very difficult to force it on Americans. But of course, the Greens are persisting. They are going to pressure farmers. They are suing farmers, especially livestock producers. They want to force these people out of business. And then what are we going to eat? Well, the Greens don't care.
Yeah. And of course, you'll know that all of this is tied up, isn't it, with this UN Agenda 2030 plan, which is all about pushing people out of rural locations into the cities, reducing food production in the traditional way and feeding them all of these artificial types of foods. Obviously, the UN at the moment is trying to censor. It's talking a lot about censoring the internet. Do you think things are going to plan for the UN with their Agenda 2030?
Well, I would just recall, you had listeners recall that originally it was Agenda 2021, which failed in the United States in the 1980s. But of course, the UN kept plugging away anyway. And now it's Agenda 2030. I don't think that, you know, they'll be able to achieve what they want on that timeline. They'll probably have to make it Agenda 2040 or 2050. The point is that they're gonna keep pressing this anti-development agenda. You know, I wrote a book 15 years ago called Green Hell, How Environmentalists Plan to Control Your Life. And it's all about how these people want to control every aspect of your life, where you live, what you eat, what kind of energy you use, and so forth, just everything about your lives. I mean, they want to control us. They want fewer of us. And there's this, it's a global conspiracy among the elites, the World Economic Forum, the UN, and they're all trying to impose these green policies on us to control us, to have fewer of us. And, you know, they keep missing their dates because, of course, ironically for them, they're incredibly incompetent people, but they will keep at it.
Yeah, and they will. And of course, you know, it started up with the Millennium Goals, didn't it, a long time ago. So they do keep on changing the goalposts. Talking about population, Steve, you know, we all hear all the time about the globalists. There's too many people on the planet. We need to reduce the population. Elon Musk has come and said, actually, it's not overpopulation we should be worried about. It's actually population collapse. And we're seeing birth rates declining to quite dangerous levels in Japan, in Germany, across the West. Do you agree with Elon, actually, that is our biggest threat, is actually that populations are going to collapse across Western societies?
Well, yes, of course. I think that's true. I China has recently, China experimented with the one-child policy and that failed. So China has now gone to a three-child policy. Now, it is the green theory that fewer people will cause fewer emissions. But of course, in China and India, they don't have these ridiculous thoughts or ridiculous goals. And so there's going to be more people from Asia. There's going to be fewer Westerners. Our cultures are going to be overrun. And I see that as really the problem. Western culture is being jeopardized by these green policies and Westerners, not being allowed to talk about the science of any of this and the morality without being canceled. That's really the threat to our culture.
Yeah, and of course, as the more they try and push these policies, and we see countries like India and China just carrying on as they were, we're going to see some kind of pushback, aren't we? Particularly in the US, if Trump gets back in. Do you think, though, that they will just scupper his second term just like they did his first term? Or do you think he can actually do things politically in America that will put the states on a more permanent path?
Yes. Well, while I hope Trump is reelected, I am also prepared for violence and pushback and sabotage like I've never seen before. We saw what they did during his first term. It's going to be worse during his second term, but it's just something that we're going to have to push through and fight back against.
Yeah, of course, it was Russiagate, wasn't it, from day one first term? Yeah. I mean, what do you think with the election? Do you think, I think it's clear that Trump is going to stand now. I mean, he's so far ahead in the polls. A lot of these court cases, they provide put obstacles in his way. The big question for me, though, is Joe Biden. At the moment, the Democrats are continuing to say that he's going to be their nominee. We've got the National Convention, Democratic Convention in August. Do you think that there's any possibility that they can really put Biden up in November, given that he'll be 81. He's already lost his faculties. And, you know, we're talking about another 4 years, aren't we?
Well, Democrats don't seem to care. They don't, you know, it doesn't really matter to them that Biden is senile and enfeebled. He represents just, they own the executive branch. And so that's what's most important. Even if Biden was to something that happened to him, well, they would have Kamala Harris, who is, although she's much younger, she's equally feeble. they don't care because she's not going to be the decision maker. There are other people that are telling her what to do. So they kind of look at it as, it's a party run office. So it doesn't really matter. And if Republicans, they would run anybody. And, you know, I guess they feel that, well, Joe Biden beat Trump in 2020. Possibly they can pull him over the line again. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be a very close race. It should not be. Trump is going to have to win by a lot to overcome the inevitable cheating that's going on.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very exciting year, you know, and of course, something new happens every day, it seems. And it's just hard to predict what's going to happen because we just don't know. There's so many possibilities now.
Exactly. And where are we now? We're in March. The election, I think, is on the 5th of December, which is bonfire night here in the UK, where we burn Guy Fawkes, who tried to blow up Westminster here. So it is a very, very long time. You know, well, on one hand, it's a very short time to go. But on the other, there's lots that can happen. Obviously, we've got two wars that are going on around the world. So who knows what will happen. Yeah. But Steve Malloy, thank you very much for joining me on the Freeman Report. I hope you'll come back soon.
Anytime, James. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Right, okay. We've run out of time for today's Freeman Report, but I'll be back again tomorrow to do it all again. So please join me then right here on TNT.